Unit 8. Protecting Our Environment. Part 1. Pre-reading task. Listen to the recording 2 or 3 times, and then think over the following questions. 1. What kind of paradise is described in the song? 2. Why do people have to pay to see the trees? 3. What would happen if farmers continued to use DDT? 4. What is the theme of the song?
Listen to the song called Big Yellow Taxi. The singer, Amy Grant, will sing and see what it is about. When people live in the countryside, they want to live in the city. And when they get to live in the city, they begin to miss the beauty of nature, which is just how the singer feels. She remembers how beautiful the countryside was before it was built over with parking lots, hotels, fashion shops, and nightclubs. In her words,
"They paved paradise and put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swimming hotspot."
City life has become so far removed from nature that she jokes about how we may have to pay to enjoy it.
"They took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And then they charged all the people $25 just to see them."
Not such a wild idea, perhaps, when one remembers city people have to pay for their parks. But the problem is not only in the cities. We are destroying nature even in the countryside, as chemicals such as DDT that farmers use to protect crops wipe out insects and then the birds that feed on them. The singer calls for them to stop.
Hey, farmer, farmer, put away your DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, but leave me the birds and the bees, please.
Sadly, we often don't realize just how much things mean to us until it is too late. The same is true of everything, even of people who are close to us. The singer can't help her thoughts coming round to this point, for only last night her lover left her, slamming the door behind him before driving off into the night in a taxi.
Late last night I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi carried off my old man.
In personal life, as with public issues, it is much the same. We only find out how valuable things were to us when we lose them, which all goes to show that...
Don't it always seem to go, that you don't know what you got till it's gone?
Part 2. Text A. Protecting nature certainly has benefits, but it has costs as well. How are we to balance the two when deciding how far we should go in caring for the environment? Saving Nature, But Only for Man, by Charles Krauthammer.
Environmental sensitivity is now as required an attitude in polite society as is, say, belief in democracy or aversion to nylon. But now that everyone has claims to love Mother Earth, how are we to choose among the dozens of conflicting proposals, restrictions, projects, regulations, and laws advanced in the name of the environment? Clearly not everything with an environmental claim is worth doing. How to choose? There is a simple way. First, distinguish between environmental luxuries and environmental necessities. Luxuries are those things it would be nice to have if costless. Necessities are those things we must have regardless. Then apply a rule. Call it the fundamental principle of sensible environmentalism. Combating ecological change that directly threatens the health and safety of people is an environmental necessity. All else is luxury. For example, preserving the atmosphere by both protecting the ozone layer and halting the greenhouse effect is an environmental necessity. In April, scientists reported that ozone damage is far worse than previously thought. Ozone reduction not only causes skin cancer and eye cataracts, it also destroys plankton, the beginning of the food chain on top of which we humans sit. The reality of the greenhouse effect is more speculative, though its possible consequences are far deadlier. Melting ice caps, flooded coastlines, disturbed climate, dried up plains, and ultimately, empty breadbaskets. The American Midwest feeds the world. Are we prepared to see Iowa acquire Albuquerque's climate and Siberia acquire Iowa's? Ozone reduction and the greenhouse effect are human disasters. They happen to occur in the environment, but they are urgent because they directly threaten man. A sensible environmentalism, the only kind of environmentalism that will win universal public support, begins by unashamedly declaring that nature is here to serve man. A sensible environmentalism is entirely man-centered. It calls for man to preserve nature, but on the grounds of self-preservation. A sensible environmentalism does not sentimentalize the earth. It does not ask people to sacrifice in the name of other creatures. After all, it is hard enough to ask people to sacrifice in the name of other humans. Think of the public resistance to foreign aid and welfare. Ask hard-working voters to sacrifice in the name of the snail darter, and if they are feeling polite, they will give you a shrug. Of course, this man-centeredness runs against the grain of contemporary environmentalism that worships the earth to the point of excess. One scientific theory, Gaia theory, actually claims that earth is a living organism. This kind of environmentalism likes to consider itself spiritual. It is nothing more than sentimental. It takes, for example, a highly selective view of the kindliness of nature. My nature worship stops with the May storms that killed more than 125,000 Bengalis and left 10 million homeless. A non-sentimental environmentalism is one founded on Protagoras' principle that man is the measure of all things. Such a principle helps us to fight our way through the jungle of environmental argument. Take the current debate raging over oil drilling in a corner of the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge. Environmentalists fighting against a bill working its way through Congress to permit such exploration argue that we should be conserving energy instead of drilling for it. This is a false either-or proposition. The country does need a substantial energy tax to reduce consumption. But it needs more protection, too. Government estimates indicate a nearly 50-50 chance that under the ANWR lies one of the five largest oil fields ever discovered in America. We have just come through a war, fought in part over oil. Energy dependence costs Americans not just dollars, but lives. It is a ridiculous sentimentalism that would deny ourselves oil that is peacefully attainable because it risks disrupting the breeding grounds of Arctic reindeer. I like the reindeer as much as the next man, and I would be rather sorry if their mating patterns are disturbed. But you can't have everything. And if the choice is between the welfare of reindeer and reducing oil dependence that gets people killed in wars, I choose man over reindeer every time. Similarly, the spotted owl. I am no enemy of the owl. If it could be preserved at no or little cost, I would agree. The variety of nature is a good, a high aesthetic good. But it is no more than that. And sometimes aesthetic goods have to be sacrificed to the more fundamental ones. If the cost of preserving the spotted owl is the loss of livelihood for 30,000 logging families, I choose family over owl. The important distinction is between those environmental goods that are fundamental and those that are merely aesthetic. Nature is our charge. It is not our master. It is to be respected and even cultivated. But it is man's world. And when man has to choose between his well-being and that of nature, nature will have to accommodate. Man should accommodate only when his fate and that of nature are bound up together. The most urgent accommodation must be made when the very integrity of man's environment, e.g., atmospheric ozone, is threatened. When the threat to man is of a lesser order, say the pollutants from coal and oil fire generators that cause death from disease but not fatal damage to the ecosystem, a more moderate accommodation that balances economic against health concerns is in order. But in either case, the principle is the same. Protect the environment because it is man's environment. The sentimental environmentalists will call this saving nature with a totally wrong frame of mind. Exactly. A sensible, a humanistic environmentalism does it not for nature's sake, but for our own.
Language Sense Enhancement. Read aloud the following poem.
The Beauty of Nature by James Teh. One cool evening, I put aside all duty to sit alone watching the sunset. And as I do, I think of scenes filled with beauty, scenes I wish to never forget. I think of the beach with the sand and the sea, the waves roaring up then gently lapping the beach, The cries of the seagulls, so happy, so free, if only men realized the lesson it can teach. I think of a lake, the crystal clear water, so pure, so smooth and cool on my skin. The air, so clean, no toxic slaughter. There's a key, a lesson, held within. I think of a waterfall, water freeing, flowing. The gentle gush, gurgling in my ears. The wind on my face, calmly blowing. So many have not learnt in so many years. The sunset, the beach, the lake, the waterfall. They're things of nature, not man-made at all. Characteristics unbeatable by man, have they all. Their peace and beauty, both of which it seems men want to fall.
3. Read the following quotations. Learn them by heart if you can. You might need to look up new words in a dictionary.
Complete adaptation to environment means death. The essential point in all response is the desire to control environment. By John Dewey.
We won't have a society if we destroy the environment. By Margaret Mead.
We make the world we live in and shape our own environment. By Orison Swett Marden.
When man is happy, he is in harmony with himself and his environment. By Oscar Wilde.
4. Read the following joke for fun.
How many environmentalists does it take to change a light bulb?
10. 1 to install the new bulb, and 9 to figure out what to do with the discarded bulb for the next 10,000 years.